Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna.
And together, we created the Cogno Movement System. And we'd like to welcome you to the New Life Perspectives Radio Show,
where we're going to be sharing with you tools, tips, and ideas that are going to change your life.
Hello, hello in UK Health Radio Land. I'm Liz Larson, and I'm here with my friend,
Bill McKenna.
Hey, Bill McKenna. And we're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives Radio Show, and we happen to be the crew that created the Cogno Movement System. And today we're doing something a little bit different. So, you know, Bill and I get this question a lot. Where did you get started? How did it all start? And some of that's easier to answer than others. Bill McKenna wrote a book about how he got started in this industry called The Only Lesson. It's a beautiful book if you haven't read it yet. It's not that long. It's so easy to read, but it really is worth a read. And today Bill's going to ask me some of those questions here live on the radio. So go for it, Bill McKenna.
Yeah. Well, for once, I get to put you in the hot seat.
Nice.
The first thing is I have to tell this to the globe that's listening to this right now. It's with tremendous gratitude for Liz Larson that I do this interview, because without Liz, all the wonderful things that have come to life with Cogno Movement would simply not be. There has been literally thousands and thousands of lives impacted across the globe in absolutely miraculous ways, from physical to emotional to relationship to finances. All of it has come out of Cogno Movement, and cosmically, for whatever reason, we needed to come together. We have no business coming together on this planet Earth, right? But it needed to happen. So anyway, without further ado, Liz, I want to start off at the beginning, at the very, very beginning. Now, you were born a Jehovah's Witness, right?
No, actually, no. We didn't become Jehovah's Witnesses until I was 6 years old.
6 years old. Mm-hmm. So this is, they have their own set of rules around life and that sort of thing, and what's right and wrong and this and that. So if you could take me through those early years of life and how you felt and what kind of things were going on for you as a human as you came into this world as early as you can remember.
You know, I was that person that as long as I could remember back to childhood, that people would ask me questions that I had no business knowing. And, you know, I also was the kind of person that knew the answer immediately. I remember being a kid and during a Cogno Movement session, one of these things came up of being told, don't say that, that's ridiculous. Because I think people were a little bit of afraid of the things I could see and that I knew, but also they just couldn't help but ask. I was that kid that people would describe as an old soul, even though I had no idea what that meant. None at all. Didn't make any sense to me. I was also that kid that people would say was special, but I also had no idea what that meant. It just was that things were very magical in my life. Like, you know, there were all kinds of, I could say that life looked sparkly to me back then. Everything looked sparkly. There were people in my life that I now know weren't actually physical people. there was a time in my life when my brother and I would play with my dolls. My brother's 2 years younger, so I made him play dolls with me. And there were names that we would use, that people that we seemed to know that weren't people who were a part of our lives. So that's kind of how it started out. And then when I was four, my family moved to Oregon. A big move. We were in Southern California and we moved to Oregon. And then in about 2 years, my parents became Jehovah's Witnesses. But it was very quickly after we arrived that they became friends with that community. The problem with that is they don't believe in the afterlife. And anything that I might be experiencing would then be considered demonic. Well, I was also a pretty bright kid. And so I knew, started to learn very quickly what to say and what not to say. But we moved into a house that was 100 years old at the time. And it had a lot of interesting characters in the house at that time as well, which to me just didn't seem out of the ordinary. Most of them weren't scary. There were a couple of things that were. But I would wake up in the night, wake up physically floating through the house, having no idea how that was happening. It happened often. But as I got older, I really just, as you do, act like, well, that's a memory that didn't happen, except for that I know that it did. But as I grew and learned, and I was a really good student at church, wasn't called church, called meetings, but I was very good student of all of that. And asked a lot of questions, but was, you know, told very, very quickly that none of that was something that was acceptable to talk about out loud.
Wow. So, I know there's a bunch of people listening to this and they're like, hold on, pump the brakes. Wait a second. So I'll start with the seeing things. Like, you actually had the experience of actually, you said, answering people's questions correctly. Mm-hmm. At an age where you don't know the answer, it's just you know the answer, but you have no business knowing whatever that is, but somehow you knew, and people would take advantage of that and like, hey, you know what? Go ask Liz. She knows.
You know, they did. It was really strange. And I remember thinking, this is really strange. And they would ask me a question that I had no business knowing. And it was about all kinds of things, how to fix things, where things were. A lot of times it was a question for themselves, emotional stuff. And I would think to myself as a little kid, what the hell are you asking me for? I have no idea. Oh, actually, I do. I would just tell them the answer and they would go away like it was the most natural thing on the planet. What's funny about that is that plays into years later, many, many years later, making an agreement to actually continue that work. But there was a place in between where a lot of that, it didn't shut off, but I was no longer a willing participant.
Oh, okay. Well, like so many people, it's like not okay. There are probably people listening to this broadcast and you remember the times where you had intuitive abilities or something, and then, you know, your parents are not okay. In your case, you know, the absolute opposite, which is beyond not okay. They were seeing it as a religion, as demonic in some way.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I don't think my parents ever saw it that way. I really know that my mom knew who I was. I really did, because my mom was that person also. She knew exactly what was going on in the house without anybody saying it. It wasn't just mom intuition. You know, there were things she would know. And I'm like, oh man, I know I never said that out loud. And she knew. She shared that with her mom as well. But becoming, you know, being part of that religion, it was just one of those things that went under the rug. We just didn't talk about it, you know? And I knew there were certain things I just couldn't say out loud. to my folks. You know, not that they would be mad or any of that. I knew it would make them afraid, so I just didn't. You know, I just had that awareness. And I want to clarify something. It wasn't that I ever stopped at having that skill. It's just that I wasn't in a full agreement that I would let anybody know, or that, you know, I would be using it willingly. It just never stopped though. People, it was like I had a signpost on my forehead, ask Liz, she knows. You know, when I was a little kid in grade school, oh, go ask Lizzie, she'll know what we're supposed to do. She'll know how we're supposed to do it. You know, she'll be the one that will explain this to us and take the lead if they're afraid to ask the teacher. So it's just who I was, you know, who I am, I guess.
Who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And this floating about the house, was this experience as you were floating around your house, did you happen to be with your body or outside of your body? Did your body actually levitate, or was your body still in the bed?
Nope. It was my full body, because I would end up somewhere else in the house.
So you actually were levitating.
Yeah.
And moving to another part of the house.
Yeah. I would end up in another part of the house and sleep the rest of the night there. And I wasn't, you know, sleepwalking. I would be fully aware of this situation happening. And there were so many weird things that happened to me that I just didn't really question. It's like, okay, well, I guess there's that again. You know, I remember being aware of a place in that house that seemed like another dimension to me, but I didn't have the language for that at all. I knew as a grown-up person, because I remembered it so well, I knew as a grown-up person that that place couldn't actually have been in that house structurally. I knew what the house looked like. I knew that it could not have actually been there. Only I experienced it. So there was a part of that house that I did not want to go to. And, you know, my mom would get a little mad at me, you know, go there and get that thing. And I'd be like, I ain't going there. But, you know, that's why I was experiencing a place that didn't really exist, that for me was really uncomfortable. I don't know what it was exactly to this day, but I can experience it if I think about it again, this place. So I was a weird kid who had the awareness not to say anything about being a weird kid. The only thing that was really obvious was the people asking me questions about things I had no business knowing.
So you had this knowing. This is a high degree of intelligence, emotional intelligence, is to know, okay, this over here, this situation is outside the scope of what's acceptable, and I can't really stop it, but I'm just going to not talk about it so that other people don't get freaked out or upset with it. And especially as you kind of headed in those early years into that religion that were like, definitely not.
Yeah.
That's a no-go zone.
That was a real no-go zone. And I just knew that we didn't do that. And, you know, it wasn't out of fear. It was out of kindness. I was that kid that the teachers knew, you know, if you had to do a dance or whatever, where you had to hold hands with someone and there was somebody who had warts on their hands or that no one wanted to touch, I was the person who could do that without judgment, with kindness. You know, I was that kid who always got the kindness awards. But it wasn't out of trying to be kind. It was out of just a knowing. I knew what people were feeling. I also knew people's true intentions. So as a kid, that was a little bit painful, experiencing other people's emotions and knowing who people really were. So that part was a little uncomfortable. But how it served me is that I was able to provide kindness to people who otherwise wouldn't have gotten kindness. Speaking of kindness, we have to hear some kind words from the UK Health Radio Network. So we will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. station that makes you feel good.
So, Liz Larson, my gosh, you were born with the ability innate to decipher people's true intentions, a very difficult thing because it can be extremely confusing. All of us get very confused at an early age because people are literally bigger than us. They're adults. That's what they're called. And they wear uniforms, robes, hats, special symbols, badges, all these things. And they are so right. You know, they wouldn't do anything wrong or have a bad intention, right? These are kind of globally the way it is for all of us. So you had this ability. How was it going through life with this, knowing that? How did you navigate?
Well, actually, what's interesting, it was never confusing for me. I just knew exactly who a person was, you know, and I would avoid them if I knew they were not great. You know, I was really articulate, even as a very little kid. So sometimes, occasionally, if they crossed me, I let them know I knew who they were. Rarely. But it was often very confusing for them. It was rare that I did it. I mostly just avoided. But I had this just very clear sense. And there was always this sense of maybe being a lot older than I actually was. In fact, people perceived me as I got to be a teenager. A lot of times people would think I was actually a teacher at the school or an administrator at the school. There was kind of just that sense, you know, as I was a young adult, people, they would hire me for jobs way older than I am or was at the time. They had this sense. So I also had that sense of being way older and just sort of knowing the truth about things. And so I just kind of went along with that.
Went along with it. Okay. And you said earlier in this interview that there were things that you would see. You would see, not only would you know, but you would see. Tell us about that.
I'm not sure everything about what everything was that I saw. I know I could see people's dead people, not all the time, but sometimes. I think there were, you know, help. In fact, I know there was some friendly things that were around me that assisted me, that were with me until 10. That was a real demarcation for me. And I'll share about that in a moment. But at 11, my grandfather died and he lived in our house. And he wasn't somebody that any of us liked. He was mean. He'd been a World War II vet, had a plate in his head, had a stroke. So it wasn't his fault, but, you know, he just wasn't the grandpa that you wanted to have around. Well, one day on the way to school, we were all getting ready for school and he had a heart attack. The ambulance had to come and get him. Around 11 o'clock that day, somehow, for some reason, we all went to school. That was a little weird, but we did. And around 11 o'clock, my mom had them call us to the office and tell us that he died. Well, I wasn't sad because he was really, had become unkind, mean to us as kids. And so, you know, went through the day, still stayed at school, which is also a little bit weird, but we did. Went home, and that night I got up in the night to go to the bathroom and get a drink, like I always do. I have the bladder the size of a walnut. I know that's TMI, but you know, I'm a person who's up and down in the night anyway, and I was back then. Got up to go down the hallway, and I had to pass by his room, and I was aware there was someone in the room crying. I thought it might have been my mom. So I look in the room, and there's my grandpa, and he's crying. And I said, well, what's wrong? And he said, well, I don't understand why the family left me at the hospital. So I said, well, because you died. at the hospital, you had a heart attack and you died. So I don't know, but you're really not supposed to be here. And then, you know, he had an awareness and he was gone. So I wasn't asleep. He was there, you know, and then I went back to bed as though that were an interaction that happens to everyone every day. You know, as I remember it now, it wasn't with big emotion. It wasn't like, oh my God, I just saw grandpa. I never told anyone until I was a grown up. I told, you know, a couple of people. I may have told my mom at one point. And you know, it was weird, even though they didn't believe in the afterlife with their religion, she just said, oh, okay. I mean, it didn't surprise her even a bit. Wouldn't have shocked me if she didn't have a similar experience. She wasn't surprised. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. That was good. That was very good that your mom was able to, you know, just listen to you and accept. And she was also obviously, you know, cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So that she knew it's true, right? She knows it's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So tell us, 10 years old, there was some line of demarcation in your life. What happened to you at 10 years old?
Well, this is an interesting thing. You know, I was really like a unicorn, like, woohoo, look what I can do, you know, happy as a kid. You know, my life just felt really magical. I had these amazing, amazing parents, had siblings that were fine. You know, we had a pool. We were the only one in our neighborhood who had a pool. And our family just invited people over and they were wonderful humans, you know, very well liked in their congregation and the neighborhood and just amazing. Well, one night I'm evidently partially awake. And, you know, as I look back, I would have said maybe I wasn't fully awake at the time, but I'm looking into the, I had a canopy bed. My mom had built me with her own hands, this gorgeous canopy bed. And I was the only girl in the family. So I'm seeing fireflies all around the room. At least that's the memory I have of it. I'm aware maybe it wasn't accurate that it was fireflies, but lights everywhere. And I'm just fascinated watching them. And for years, I thought one came down towards me and frightened me, but I sat straight up in the bed and shrieked. I woke the whole house up. You know, I was absolutely not terrified, but something had happened. And I didn't realize till years later what exactly it was that happened, but everything changed after that moment. I had became kind of depressed, but I could also see the world for what it was. And it was uncomfortable and it was dark. And my friends that I had seen for all my life were not there anymore. I think what happened, and this is just my impression, and is that my umbilical cord was cut. You know, I think I had to do life like everybody else had to do life at that point. I knew what I was here to do. But I wasn't all that willing at that point after. And life became more difficult. I mean, I still had amazing parents. I still had a good life. I had nothing to complain about. But I became uncomfortable around other people. I became aware, self-aware physically like I'd never been before, like uncomfortable with the shape of myself. And, you know, that's a lot of that's just becoming, you know, going into puberty, but it was a very sharp line of demarcation. Now, here's something I've told almost no one in my life, but it's important. From that moment on, I had this idea that I had actually died in that moment or went into a coma. And it was though I was in that bed in a coma. And there was some other part of me experiencing this hard life. Now, years later, Barbara Lamb insisted on doing a regression for Bill and I both. And a little bit of that was answered about what that was. And it really was what I thought. It was a really cutting of the extra help, you know, that I had. So life couldn't look quite so magical. I still had to do the thing. I had to do the earth thing, where things get uncomfortable. So I had that kind of a dark shadow for many, many years. And the impression that this wasn't really what I, this wasn't really me. I was over there and this was, you know, an altar kind of living this life. And no, if everybody's questioning, no, I didn't have any mental issues, you know, none of that. I was still the person that everybody asked the questions of. I was still the person that, you know, was very articulate. I still, you know, knew what people were. I just didn't seem to have the extra help that I think I came with.
And also was that you described prior to 10 years old and prior to this Firefly experience that there was a certain joy, a lightness to you, like this very light being that was just filled with happiness and joy and able to really just simply, you know, flitter through life, having fun and unencumbered. And then afterwards, that part of you basically went dormant.
Yeah, sparkle was gone for sure. You know, that freeness, that, you know, kind of interacting, you know, almost like I really belonged here and then I didn't. You know, then I just felt like I didn't. I was really, I think, uncomfortable on the planet, you know.
Wow. Now you said something really important. You know, I know the listeners out there are listening is like, I knew what I had come to do. I knew my purpose. So you already knew this when you were in the sparkle phase prior mm-hmm. to 10 years old. You knew then what you came to do?
I knew. I so always knew that.
You always knew.
That ability to answer the question that I was asked, that's what it was about, that I was here to help people. That was it, here to help people. And I think I always knew that I was here to help a lot of people move to a higher understanding. But, you know, then I'm part of a group that is not about that at all. And this particular group, you know, you become very close. And if you reveal anything like that, you're not only kicked out of the group, but no one can talk to you again. You're shunned, essentially. They call it disfellowshipping. So now it becomes all the more important to not reveal that. So I started finding ways that I could do that without being revealed. So, for example, I was the Dear Abby of my high school newspaper for 4 years. No one ever had an idea. I revealed it later on to my girlfriends, like not even my closest friends knew. And I revealed it to my girlfriends when we were adults. And they were like, oh my God, that was you. I always thought that was a school counselor. But weirdly, the school assigned me the position that should have been gone to a school counselor. And I knew the answers to the questions and I answered them. When we would have events at the school, they always set me up like a fortune teller. You know, I never said a word to anybody. Nobody knew. I would never have revealed it, not even to my closest friends, but they also knew. You need to know something, go ask Liz. So they would set me up as a fortune teller, which was super embarrassing actually for me. And painful. Two of the kids in my class came in for readings and they were people that I knew. One was a girl I'd grown up with my whole life. The other was a boy who kind of liked me. And I knew when they were going to pass. One was very quickly after high school and the other was a little later, you know. And that was hard because I had to carry that with me, you know, until it eventually did happen in both cases. You know, so there were things like that, but I did do the work just covertly and reluctantly.
Wow. So you said, take us through. There was another thing that you said. There was a point in time, and I'm sure there's something that led up to this, but you said, I made an agreement. So tell us about what happened before and what led up to an agreement and what was the agreement? If you can or willing.
Yeah, I can tell parts of it for sure. So it came a lot later. So before that, you know, it would have made sense for me to go into counseling, but I couldn't do that. I couldn't sit in the room and feel everyone's emotions. And, you know, I couldn't do that. That would have made sense for me. So every step of the way, I avoided the education that I would have needed for that. In fact, it was a little bit weird the way that I would be pushed away from things and towards other things, educational wise. I went towards music for a while, which I was very good at. I went towards business after that. You know, I was avoiding the giving people the answers to questions with my whole being. I somehow had gotten the idea that all of that was less than, that that was a thing that people did who weren't smart. So I needed to do the smart things, right? I needed to do the business things. I needed to do the linear things. And yet there was always this thing. I was the person that people would come ask the questions of. You know, I was the person who was at 19 put in a manager position over someone who was in their 60s. It was ridiculous on the part of the store owner, just ridiculous. But that's how people saw me. So eventually in my avoidance, I ended up being the owner and the CEO of car dealerships with my family. And I'd started to dabble, taking a few classes, you know, on the side, but they were very linear. One of which was the Sedona method, which is very simple. Could you, would you, when? So there's nothing woo-woo about it. There was nothing spiritual about it. It was just a way to help people clear blocks. Only at the meeting that I went to, I had an encounter with these helpers again. They showed up.
Oh, they showed back up again?
Yeah, they did. So I was at this session, the Sedona Method session, and it's very straightforward. Could you let it go? Would you let it go? When? And they had us do this thing where you look at someone else in the eyes. I just hate that process. But, you know, you're sitting there staring at someone's face. So they said, don't do it with anyone that you knew or you came with. But I did know this one woman kind of, and she kind of knew me. And she really didn't want to do this with some of the people in the room. She's like, Liz, come over. So I'm sitting looking at her. And as I'm looking at her, she was very, very gray, white haired. She was ill. Very, very gray, white skin, no makeup of any kind on, like the negative of that. And I saw this woman with a painted face. I mean, a really heavy makeup show up. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I say nothing, right? I'm used to saying nothing, you know. And then I see that and I'm looking at her and I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe that's her mom or something. That's weird. Next, right behind her, it's like this very, very beautiful young woman peeks her head out and stands up behind her and makes this motion like she's trying to pick her up, but she won't go. Like she's trying to lift her out of the chair, but she won't go. And she's looking right at me like, you get the message here, sister? And I'm thinking, holy God, I hope no one else can see this. Like I just didn't want to be the weirdo in the room. I knew exactly what it was, Bill. I knew exactly what it was. I wasn't ready, you know? I wasn't ready for that. So
what did you know? What did you know?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. So this session ends and I feel myself leaning forward and I'm like outside of my body now. Every part of me is screaming, don't do that. But I lean forward and in the calmest voice, I put my hands on the lady's name was Beth on her, her hands and I said, Beth, the angels are here and they're trying to help you, but you're not listening. They're trying to lift you up. They're doing everything they can, the heavy lifting, and you're not listening. And she sat back as though I had just told her I had a turkey sandwich on Tuesday. And she said, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. Well, I got up and I ran out of the room. I mean, I was sweating. I think my upper lip was sweating. You know, I probably had all kinds of Italian stink. I mean, my heart rate, I think I ran out of the room. I'm sure I probably didn't, but I ran out and stood in the hallway and nearly hyperventilated. Not that I'd seen the thing, but that I had leaned forward and told someone that I'd seen the thing. Now, here's what you have to understand. And this plays into the agreement. I had no belief in angels. As a Jehovah's Witness, we knew about Gabriel and Michael, but they weren't a focus. You didn't interact with them. You didn't talk to them. There wasn't such a thing as guides or whatever. Now, is what I saw an angel? I don't know, but that was what the best I could describe what I think I was seeing. But it was one of those people who popped back up and again is like, you know, ding, ding, ding. Hey, hi. Hey, can you please tell this one right here that she needs to do something different? You know, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So I ran out. Anyway, I don't know how long I was in the hallway. You know, as you and I know, some of us tend to lose time occasionally. And this was one of those times. At some point, I came back in and sat down, and the group had completely changed. They were in the middle of another process. I sat down. Remember, the group was in a big circle, and I sat down, and I keep seeing this from behind Beth, somebody waving at me, you know, like.
Oh my gosh, Liz, I know the whole audience here, you know, you're on the edge of your seat, just like I am. We're going to have to take a break with UK Health Radio. We'll be right back after this message. I can't wait to hear the rest of this. UK Health, take it away.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. Liz, oh my gosh, you're back in the room and there they are waving at you. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, at that point it was more than one. And I am literally just trying to be normal in the room. Just trying to be normal. At this point, the whole room, you know, goes bright white. I don't know if it was lights in the room, you know, like otherworldly lights, or if I was ready to pass out. I'm not sure, but I just did not want to be discovered as this, right? So later on in the day, Beth comes back and she said, was there any other message for me? And I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, don't ask me this. And I said no, and then immediately gave her the next message, you know, about what she needed to be doing with her health and with her life. And that she really was on the verge of passing, but she had work to do. And so they needed her to get her act together. Like, really, that was the message. Lady, you need to get your act together. We're trying to help you, and you're busy fussing around. She was in a bad relationship. She was in work she didn't like. Well, I found out later that she took that message and went. She ended up getting out of the relationship. She found someone else. She moved to Hawaii, living a vibrant, beautiful life as a healer and a teacher. But, you know, in that moment, I just didn't want to be me that gave that answer. So I drove from that class directly to sign the papers for what would have been our biggest car dealership, knowing I shouldn't be doing that, knowing for sure I shouldn't be doing that. You know, every fiber of my being knew better, but it's what I did. Well, we ended up getting, chewed up and spit out of that some years later. Banking collapse in 2011. It was horrifying. It was so painful. You know, I didn't want to be on the planet in that situation. All my family was involved. And I was desperate at this point. You know, I just didn't want our lives to be destroyed, right? So I made an agreement with, at the time, it was funny because I had started talking to Archangel Michael. Now, I still don't know if it's Archangel Michael or not, but that's the name that someone had suggested to say. So I did it. I'm just talking to anybody, you know, no one in particular, but, you know, that was the name. And I said, all right. I remember I was driving in the car. I know exactly where I was on the planet. I'll do it. I'll do the work. If you just help us through the situation, like it was a negotiation, I'll do it. Wherever you send me, I'll say the thing. Just tell me where to go. I'll do it. I'll do the work. And I remember after that going to, at the mall, and I would tell my husband, I got to go stand in the purse department. Well, I don't buy purses and bags. I'm not that kind of a gal. Purse department. Oh, are you working? Yeah, I'm working. Even he knew at the time. So I would go stand in the purse department. And I remember this one night, there was nobody there. It was like 8 o'clock at night, and there was nobody in the purse department. But pretty soon, the lady who worked there, and she was an older lady, dressed beautifully, worked there. And she came over and she said, can I help you find something? I said, no, I'm just snooping. And she said, you know, I have a question for you. And she asked me the biggest question of her life. And I knew the answer. And she said, thank you. And I walked away. I'm like, whoa, like, how is this working? Like, did she know to come to ask me? Do I have a sign on my forehead? So for years, you know, that's what I did. I went where I was supposed to go. You know, if I was supposed to help whoever, I did that thing. And then I became, decided I had to do the work, and I became an NLP practitioner, a master NLP practitioner with lots of other little education on the side, because it seemed linear. It didn't seem very woo-woo. Of course, it went woo-woo on me, but it seemed linear. It seemed logical. It seemed thoughtful. It did not seem like, you know, I was a fortune teller. So it was acceptable. So then when not that many years later, there was an opportunity. I met Bill McKenna. Everything came together. Bill had this weird idea about a ball. You know, that was it. I knew it was it. I knew I had to put my attention on it and my full attention on it. And then, you know, this thing happened so rapidly with Cogna Movement, and it still continues. You know, and I still do the work. This morning I had been asked, how did this whole thing start? And I would give the answer, the short answer of how Bill and I met and, you know, the magic of that. But I never really told the full truth about it. And this morning, you know, that was the work. That was the direction. You got to tell the truth. And I don't know why. I don't know why today's the day, but it is. And maybe it's that it helps somebody else. Maybe somebody else will hear my story and be like, oh my God, that's me. And they'll understand what they're here to do. So it's funny. You know, recently somebody did an astrological reading, and somebody else did a human design reading. And I never instigate those. I'm just not that interested because I know what I'm here to do. And both of those reports, there was nothing else on there, but basically a person who knows how to read those, a description of what we do. That's it. That's the reason. And so there's many other things.
Actually, they actually like describe.
Yeah, they describe it.
That they describe, this is what you're here to do.
Yeah.
Without knowing all of that. Just
yeah.
Like.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Yeah, this is what I'm here to do. And by now, lots of has transpired, and I know that for sure. I know what I do when I'm not here on this planet has to do with teaching as well. I know where it is. You know, that's what I do all night long in my sleep. So I know what it is now. And now I don't have any problem with the dedication to the work. I just never was willing to admit to, I think maybe some of the things that somebody might describe as the metaphysical aspects that came before, you know, there's a reason I know things about the neurology I have no business knowing. There's a reason for it, and that continues. So that's really, I mean, there's help. If you were to ask me, you know, do I channel a particular group? No, I don't. I guess there's information that comes. Do I know who they are? No, I don't. I have names that I use, but it's just the name that it showed up in the moment. And maybe it's the correct one. I'm just not the kind of person to put a lot of emphasis on it because the work's too important. I know that Bill and I are here to raise the consciousness of the planet through this work particularly. And there are other people around the planet who are receiving different kinds of work, equally important, that can speak to the people that they can reach. We can reach people who are ready for a technology, physical, logical, that can change their life. And I also think we're here for the people who are ready to live tons and tons of karma in this lifetime. Like, the people we meet have had so much crap happen to them. They're ready to clear it out one by one and very, very rapidly so that they can serve. Bill and I tend to serve the group of people who are high level teachers themselves so that they can go on and impact those that they're meant to reach. So there you have it, Bill McKenna.
Oh my gosh, Liz Larson, amazing stuff. You know, like, talk about, unveiling, right? You know, this takes a lot to tell the truth, you know, and because it's hard, right? You're listening to this and, you know, a lot of it sounds like, oh my God, you know, wait, somebody levitated, you know, somebody actually sees things. You know, all of those things are actually true. You know, you might not think they're true until, as I say, things become real for you when they're real in your experience. There was a point in my life when levitation was something that, well, you know, that's in the cartoons, you know, or something. And it sure would be nice because I'd like to do that. But once you actually see it and you know that it's real life and it's really happening, then, oh my God, it's like, kind of like at a certain point in my life, UFOs were 100% false.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
yeah.
False. And that is, do not waste my time about talking about that because it is so full of it. Until you actually see one and then you're like, holy cow, it's real. It actually is real. So anyway, the world is waking up to that reality. But these other things that Liz is talking about, again, these are actual real things. And I wouldn't have believed it in a million years until it became real in my actual experience. And I guess that's one of the things, you know, like, right, the fact we can get along because, you know, I know it's the damn truth, you
yeah.
know, and also there's a harmonization of our mission to
yeah.
Be of service, you know, to people individually and to serve the other people that are here to be the force multiplier, that are here to help the masses.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's about 1,000 other weird things that you and I could share with everybody, but we just have 1 minute left. And there is one really important thing that I want to share. On our website, it says, become who you're always meant to be. And this is something I've told my children, and I want to share this with everyone else, that you never really live even one truly happy moment, not one, until you become who you came here to be. And that's true. Once I understood, and I always knew, but once I accepted my mission and I became that, life became a really magical place. All the things I experienced when I was a kid, I mean, there's that and more now, again. But it's true, and I'll say it again, you'll never live even one truly, truly joyful, happy moment until you become who you came here on the planet. Hey, so that's my story.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz, for not only having the courage to tell everybody your story, but to actually live it, to live that, and to become who you were meant to be, to let go and actually do it. And now she's out the closet, everybody. She's out the closet.
The broom closet, right? All right, you guys. So, all right. Now that we're done telling tales, we will be back again next week with some really interesting conversations. So until then, be safe and be well. Thanks for being here, Bill McKenna.
And if you want some more stuff, two free ebooks, cognomovement.com. That's cognomovement.com.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.